Likutei Moran Tanina, Torah Samach. Rav Meizel begins by saying, Kisheyesh milchamos ba'olam, when there are wars or conflicts in the world, Haseichel mechayev sheyihye yakrus. Logic dictates that there should be an inflation. Now we know most of us are familiar with this concept. I'm saying the reality is definitely this way, that when there is a war, because of the incredible increase in need of supplies, the demand goes up very much, the supplies, the quantities available go down, and the prices shoot up. Rabbi Nizal here is addressing this from a Ruchnius point, and Rabbi Nizal says, Kishiyesh milchamos ba'olam, when there is war or conflict in the world, Haseichel mechayev, logic dictates, sheyihye yakrus, that there should be an inflation. Why? Kinis oirer haklolo shel kayin, because there is aroused the curse that was imposed by Hashem upon Cain. We know that the first conflict to take place in the world, the first machlekes, was between the two sons of Adam HaRishon, Cain and Hevel, and we find that when that this machlekes ended up in murder, whereby Cain killed Hevel. And the Torah tells us that when Cain killed Hevel, Hashem issued several klolos at the time. There were curses issued at the time. So Rabbi Nizal says, there is aroused the curse of Cain, which was, Ki savoy desu adomo lo soysif teis koicholoch. Hashem said to Cain, even when you'll work the ground, even when you'll plow and plant and do all the normal agricultural functions that are needed to get the ground to produce its yevul, its product, loy toisif teis koicholoch, the ground will not give forth its produce to you. The ground won't produce what it's supposed to. Why? Al yedei hashfichas domim sheyesh ba'olam, through the murder that was brought into the world. The murder is what prevents the ground from giving forth its koyach in a productive way. Why? Rabbi Nizal explains, Ki klolozu nemral shvichas domim. This curse was given by Hashem because of murder. Ki ho adomo hi chayeves boze kishiyei shvichas domim. Because the ground is punished, is held guilty when there is murder in the world. This is what Rabbi Nizal is establishing as a fact now, that obviously when there is shalom in the world, when there's peace in the world, then there's parnosa benokel, then there's parnosa, the ground is producing what it's supposed to produce, everything is going well. When there's machlekes, as a result of the machlekes, there's yakrus, there's inflation, because the ground is not, there's a shortage of supply. The ground is not giving forth as much as it normally would were it not for this machlekes. Just as we see by the first major machlekes that took place between Cain and Hevel, as a result of the murder that was committed, Hashem presented a curse to the ground, saying that the ground will no longer give forth its produce. No matter how much you're going to work the ground, it's not going to produce as much as it normally should. So too, Rabbi Nizal says, any time that there is milchamos in the world, the same thing takes place. And now Rabbi Nizal is going to explain. Rabbi Nizal says, Ki hagishomim nasin al yedei ho'edim ho'elim in horetz. We know that the Gemara tells us that how is rain formed? The rain is actually formed from certain vapors that rise up from the ground. Kemoshikosuv, as the Pasuk says in the beginning of Bereshis, V'eid yale min horetz, a vapor rises up from the ground, from the earth, V'hishko eskol pnei ho'adoma, and this vapor goes up into the clouds, and it grows there, and then it forms raindrops, and at the right time when Hashem gives a command, these droplets fall to the earth, and they water all the trees and plants and grasses that need to grow, v'hishko es kol pnei adama, and it waters the whole face of the earth. Rabbeinu Zal explains, Ki min ha'edim ha'ele min ha'aretz, mizeh nasim gishomim. Because from these vapors that rise up from the earth, from that is formed rain. U'kesheyesh melchamois u'shvichas domim, and when there is war and bloodshed, azai nasim min ha'edim hanal shvichas domim. Then, instead of these vapors producing rain, these vapors produce bloodshed. These vapors that are supposed to rise up from the ground and form clouds and then form rain that's going to water the earth, when there's a war going on, these vapors form shvichas domim. They feed the bloodshed.
This is what the Pasuk says in Yecheskel Anovi. Hashem says, Vatager es bnei Yisrael, the Novi says, Vatager es bnei Yisrael, al yedei cherev, be'es Edom.
You, Hashem, lowered and humbled bnei Yisrael, al yedei cherev, through the sword, be'es Edom. At a time that they were down, at a time that they were misbehaving, that you, Hashem, wanted to turn them over into the hands of their enemies. And yet, the word that refers to their being down, when Hashem wanted to turn them over to their enemies, is this term, Edom. Edom, which also refers to this vapor, these vapors.
Rabbeinu Zal says, "Hainu bechinas edim hanal." This refers to these vapors that we mentioned before. She'al yodom nasa hashvichas domim.
These vapors actually make the shvichas domim, the bloodshed. When there's milchama in the world, these vapors feed the shvichas domim.
V'chein bekama umois.
Rabbeinu Zal says we find also by many other nations in the world.
Mitzrayim, v'amoin, umayov.
By all of these other nations.
Kisheni bo alma polosom.
When the Nevi'im, when the prophets prophesied that these nations were going to have a mapola, that they were going to fall.
Ne'mar shom bi'eis Edom.
It says over there also, if you look in the Navi uses this word Edom to refer to the time of their downfall, to the time of their destruction.
Rabbeinu Zal says, Bechinas Edim Anal,
again referring to these vapors that we mentioned before,
She'al Yodom Nase HaShvichas Domim Kanal.
It's these vapors that feed the Shvichas Domim, that actually make the bloodshed take place. These vapors could either help to produce food, otherwise these vapors turn into an item of din, of gvura, of harshness, that manifests itself in bloodshed. Now the question is, where do we see any association? The answer is, Masechta Tainus. There is one whole Gemara called Masechta Tainus, which doesn't really talk that much about the subject of fasting. It talks more about the subject of rain, about the need for rain for Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara says that one of the most important things that the Yidden used to do in the olden times, when there was a need for rain, was that they would fast. And the Gemara describes the whole Seder HaAvoda, the whole sequence that would take place. How many fasts and what the Yidden did during these fasts, how they took the Teva out in the middle of the street, and all different kinds of things that took place at the time. So this Gemara begins with the words, Mazkirin Gevurois Gishomim. We mention the greatness, Gevura means the strength, the power of Geshem, of rain. And we find throughout the Gemara Tainus, those two words are always put together, Gevurois and Gishomim. Rain is always associated with harshness. Where you would think that rain is an item of kindness, it's the kindness of Hashem to give us Parnosa, etc., etc., the fact is that Parnosa is something that comes from the left side, from the side of harshness. There's a pasuk in the Torah which says, Oirech Yomim Biyamina, that if we could picture Kaviyochel Hashem as sitting in the middle, on the right side of Hashem is Oirech Yomim, long life. The blessing of long life comes from the right side. On the left side is Oisher V'chavoid. Wealth and honor is something that represents the left side, Givura, harshness, judgment. And this is why Rabbi Nezal is presenting this fact, that you should know that this Geshem, this power of rain, which is something that comes from the side of Gevura, it's something that when things are handled properly on earth, when things are okay and people are at peace with each other, these Edim, these vapors that rise up from the earth, form rain that feeds the ground, that brings forth produce, food, achila. When there's machlekes in the world, and there's geshem in the world, suddenly these vapors become weapons. They become guns and tanks and cannons and bombs that are able to affect, that are able to feed the shvichas damim in the world, actually able to feed the bloodshed in the world. Now Rabbi Nezal says, V'alkein, and therefore, K'sheyesh milchama yisu shvichas damim, when there are wars and bloodshed, Azai ho'adama noisenes koicha l'sham, then the ground gives forth its energy, its power is given into the bloodshed, into the milchama. Ki min ha'edim ha'ilim imena nasa hashvichas damim. Because from these vapors that are rising up from the ground, they actually make shvichas damim. They cause bloodshed. V'alkein, and therefore, ein yordin kshamim. The rain will not come down. As a result, we'll see that there's an absence of rain. Why? Ki hageshomim nasin min ho'edim. Because normally, the rain is a result of these vapors. The achshov nasin min ho'edim inyan acher. And right now, these vapors are being rerouted. They're being used for something else completely. Dahinu shvichas damim kanal, which is this bloodshed. Period. Now Rabbi Nezal says, with this we understand an interesting statement in the Gemara. The Gemara in Tainus over there, Daf Chesamet Beis, the Gemara mentions some very interesting points about rain, that what happens when rain comes. One of the comments that the Gemara makes over there is that a day on which it rains is considered as great as a day when Mashiach will come. This is one of the unusual statements in the Gemara over there. This is contrary to all of those people who say when it's raining outside, it's a dreary day, it's an ugly day. You talk to certain other people, it's raining outside, pouring, you ask them, how are things? Fat, it's a beautiful day, it's gorgeous outside. So now, Rabbi Nezal says, one of the other statements that the Gemara mentions over there is, V'zeh Shom Razal, this is what the Gemara says in Tainus, B'shas Gishomim, at a time of rain, Afilu Geisois Poiskois. Even the soldiers of the army, that normally there's very, very few things that interrupt them, when a soldier is on duty working for the army, he can't say he has a little cold, he's got a little sniffle, so he's going to stay in bed, or he can't say he's tired, or his toe is hurting him, or something else. A soldier in the army, 99.999% of the time, they're moving, they're in action, they have work to do, and that's it. But the Gemara says there's one thing that does stop the army, and that's rain. The Gemara says, "Bishas kshomim," that at a time of rain, afilu geisois poiskois boi, even the soldiers stop for rain. And the Gemara proves this from a pasuk. There's a pasuk in the Torah that says, "Tilameho rave," Hashem, please feed and nourish the furrows in the field. Naches gedudeho. The gedudim means something related to fields. Gedudim also means certain units in the army. A brigade in the army is called a gedud of soldiers. Gedudeho naches. Nachas means to rest, to be quiet, to take it easy. So the Gemara says, from here we learn out that when the furrows of the fields are being watered, the gedudeho, the soldiers rest. Who cares? Why would a statement like that be in the Gemara? Who cares if they rest when it's snowing, if they rest when they have a headache? Of what importance is it for us to know that the soldiers rest when it's raining outside? The answer is, Rabbeinu Zal says, Ki kesheyesh gishomim nefsokim hagaisois v'hamolchomois kanal.
The Gemara is teaching us a concept that you should know that these two are on opposite ends of the world. When there's geshem, there's no war. There's nothing for soldiers to do. And when there's milchama, there's no geshem. These two are on opposite extremes. There's gevura. By Hashem, there's harshness. This gevura will either show itself in wars. If people decide to fight with each other, Hashem will jump in also. Hashem will join the fight, and there'll be blood spilt, there'll be fighting, there'll be milchama. Or, if there's no milchamas in the world, then you'll see geshem, then you'll see rain.
In fact, if we look in the Marsha on this statement in the Gemara, she'afilu gaisois poiskois boi, that even the soldiers stop for rain, the Marsha explains, ma she'ivrei derech poiskim boi, huvadai koshel oilam.
Is that when it's raining outside, the people that are normally traveling to work or to their house or wherever they have to go, they're forced to stop. They can't travel as easily because it's raining outside. That's certainly a negative thing. That's a problem.
Kidamrinan la'el, as the Gemara said a little bit earlier, Avol gaisois de ka'omar hocho.
But the fact that the Gemara refers over here to gaisois, hainu chayolois, this means soldiers, bale milchamois, ones who conduct war, shenoyach lo'olam kishepoiskin.
It's very beneficial to the world when these characters have to stop what they're doing. They have to stop shooting at each other and killing each other and fighting.
Vahainu, this is why the vahainu gidudeho. The word used in the pasuk is gidudeho, de mashma gidudim hayetzim lemelchama.
This refers to groups of soldiers that go out to war.
K'may god gidud yigudena v'hu yogud.
Okay, there's a pasuk when Yaakov Avinu gave the blessing to Shevet Gud, he said that their soldiers are going to go out. So we see the term gidud refers to soldiers. So here again, the Marsha is mentioning that this is a benefit to the world. The Gemara is pointing out that when it rains, the soldiers have to stop, and that's a benefit to the world. It means that when it rains, milchamos subside. There's no war. Because these two, you can't have both. It's either there's rain or there's war. One of the two.
Could you explain how concept that this vapor gives power to Shvichas Damim and wars? What's that whole concept?
That's why I brought in this topic of Gevurais. In other words, we know that Geshem is an item that comes from Gevura. There's no question at all about that. Maskirin Gvurais Kshomim. In which bracha in the Shmoneh Esrei do we mention Geshem? Mashu Rachman da Geshem? Ato Gibor La'olam Hashem, Echayim Esim Ad Rav Loishia, Mashu Varuach Amar da Geshem. We mention it in the bracha of Gvurais. So we see that this topic of Geshem and everything related to it is an inyan of Gvurais. Rabbeinu Zal saying you should know that this aid, this vapor which feeds the Geshem, is also obviously an aspect of Gevura. So you should know that the rule, the way it works is like this. If there's milchamos in the world, if there's trouble in the world, it'll show itself in this aid being redirected to feed the milchama. That's going to be the source of energy that's going to feed, because it's energy, that's what it is. Rain is an energy. Rain, when it seeps into the ground, we see it's able to produce, it's able to bring forth big trees with fruit and produce and vegetables and all kinds of things. This same energy, these vapors, if they're not being used for rain, what's happening? They're being used to feed Shvichas Damim. They're being used to cause bloodshed.
By rain, isn't it a physical thing? Is it or isn't it?
It's both. Anything in this world is a physical item and a spiritual item. What's the question?
Right, so how physical... Okay, so I mean, as it's understood, the vapors rise up and then,
Right.
How is it physically understood by the Shvichas Damim?
Obviously it's not. In other words, it's not that the raindrops turn into bullets. That's not what we're saying. But we're saying that just as this procedure of the vapors going up and turning into drops is something that you don't see necessarily, we don't watch these vapors going up and turning into clouds, and yet we know it happens. Rabbeinu Zal says you should know that when there's milchamas in the world, what happens is there's a stoppage to the rain. The rain doesn't come. And what happens to those vapors? Those vapors are feeding the milchama. Now Rabbeinu Zal is going to go off on a tangent, on something that seems to be unrelated, which we're going to see that it is related. Rabbeinu Zal is going to mention a story in the Gemara, and then we're going to go into a whole discussion about this unusual story in the Gemara. We know that one of the most outstanding rabbis of the Gemara of all time, by far, was Rabbi Akiva. And the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Akiva had, at one point in time, 24,000 Talmidim. Tzadikim Nifloam, the greatest tzadikim of the world at that time. The Gemara says that there was machlekes among them. They didn't... What's machlekes? They didn't spit on each other. They didn't smack each other. The Gemara says they didn't talk to each other respectfully. They weren't able to talk nicely enough to each other. So the Gemara says Hashem made a magefa break out, a plague, and all 24,000 died from a magefa, where it was obvious that this wasn't a natural death. This was an unnatural type death. And in fact, today, if you go in Eretz Yisrael, in the city of Tveria, Rabbi Akiva is buried sort of on top of a mountain, and that whole mountain is where these 24,000 Talmidim are buried. You have a whole mountain being one big graveyard, Rachmona Litzlan, where these 24,000 Tzadikim are buried. So the Gemara says that after these 24,000 Talmidim died, you would think that Rabbi Akiva would give up. You picture how much effort it took to cultivate 24,000 Talmidim, to teach them until they became such big tzaddikim and everything. You figure once they get wiped out, the Rebbe says, I give up, I had enough. A person can't suffer such a tremendous loss, and then you tell him, go start again. But the answer is, a tzaddik, a yid who lives by the Torah, knows, the Gemara says, that if a person has children when they're young, they should make sure to also have children when they're old. Because you never know, Rachmona Litzlan, a person never knows which children are going to live, which children are going to be from. So a person, the Gemara says, whatever you do when you're young, don't hesitate to do more and more and more, even when you get older, because you never know what's going to come from it. And the Gemara brings Rabbi Akiva as an example, that here he had 24,000 Talmidim, and if he would have stopped there, he would have been left with nothing, Chas V'Shalom. In the end, afterwards, he cultivated 5 new Talmidim, 5 outstanding ones, where the Gemara says that each one of these 5 was as great as all 24,000 before put together. That's how phenomenal these 5 tzaddikim were. Among them were Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara lists who the 5 were. The Gemara says among the 5, the greatest one was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Zal. The Gemara says there's a statement in Baba Basra, that when, in Yerushalmi, that when Rabbi Akiva was about to pass away, he pointed to Rabbi Meir, and he said to Rabbi Meir, you will take over after me. You're going to take over as the next leading tzaddik of the world. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Yochai Zal looked at Rabbi Akiva and said, I don't understand. Because obviously Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Zal knew that he himself was far greater than even Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Akiva said to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Zal, you? Only Hashem knows your greatness. The world has no concept of how great you are. In other words, there's no way for the world to be able to understand how great you are. Only Hashem knows how great you are. This is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Zal, who was one of the super closest Talmidim to Rabbi Akiva, by far. About this Rebbe and Talmud, the Gemara tells us in Psachim, Rabbeinu Zal says, Uloze mekusher masham razal, to what we just said, we can attach what the Gemara tells us in Psachim, Kishohoyo Rabbi Akiva bitfisa, that when Rabbi Akiva was captured by the Goyim, and he was put into prison, what was he put into prison for at the time? For teaching Torah. The Gemara says that the Goyim issued a decree that a person, nobody's allowed to teach Torah Barabim at the time in public. Rabbi Akiva said to them, jump in a lake. He wasn't interested in their decrees. They issued such a decree, and Hashem issued a decree that it's a mitzvah to learn Torah, and it's a much bigger mitzvah to teach Torah, and especially in public, that's the biggest mitzvah. So Rabbi Akiva went and taught Torah anyway, and the Gemara says they caught him and they put him into prison, and he ended up dying a very horrible death. Rachmanu Litzlan, the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, "Kishahoyu Rabbi Akiva b'tfisa," when Rabbi Akiva was in prison, Omar le Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. The Gemara says one time Rabbi Shimon Yochaizal came to visit him, and he said to him, "Rabbi, my rabbi, lamdeni Torah. Teach me Torah. You're in prison now, and I know it's not a Beis Medrash, it's not a shul, but at the same time, you're a Rebbe, and I'm a Talmud, and therefore the thing that I need from you most is Torah." That's not what Rabbi Shimon Yochaizal said, though. That wasn't all. He said to his Rebbe, "Ve'im lav, and if you don't teach me, ani oimer li'yochoi abba, I'm going to tell my father, Rabbi Yochai, on you, u'maisrach lamalchus, and he's going to turn you over to the goyim. He's going to tell the goyim that you're bad and you're going to get in a lot of trouble." This is a story in the Gemara in Psachim Daf Kuf Yud Beis. Rabbi Nezal says, "V'hadvorim temuhim ma'oid ma'oid." These words are very, very strange, very peculiar. Sherebi Shimon Yoimer Kadvorim Ho'ele L'Rabbi? Rabbi Shimon ben Yechoyzal would say something like this to his Rebbe, Sheyim Seru L'Malchus? That if you don't do this, I'm going to tell the Goyim on you. I'm going to tell them that you're bad. Chas v'shalom, I'm going to turn you over to the goyim. Which the Gemara says, there's no bigger, there's no worse avera in the world than a mussar, chas v'shalom. A person who turns a yid over to the goyish courts. A person who goes to the goyim and tells them bad things about a yid so that they should put the yid in prison and punish him, chas v'shalom. There's nothing worse in the world than a mussar. That's question number one. Rabbi Shimon Yochaizal would do this to his Rebbe? Number two, Vegam ki mistomo kish Rabbi Akiva Rabbi loy rotze lolamdoi bevadai kivein latoiva. Number two, let's say Rabbi Akiva wouldn't want to teach him Torah. Let's say Rabbi Shimon Yochaizal would ask Rabbi Akiva, "Please teach me Torah," and Rabbi Akiva would say no. Isn't it probable that Rabbi Akiva would have a good reason? That Rabbi Akiva had a good excuse, a reason why he wouldn't teach him Torah? Maybe, let's say over there in the prison, it's filthy, Rachmanu Litzlan, let's say they don't have bathrooms over there, and people will go to the bathroom in an open place, and the halacha is that you're not allowed to speak words of Torah in such a place, in a bathroom or something like that. Or maybe for other reasons, who knows what kind of reason. So let's say Rabbi Akiva would say, "I don't want to teach you." Wouldn't it be probable that he would have a good reason for it? And number three, the funniest question is, Vigam haloi kvar hu tofus b'tfisa. Rabbi Akiva was already in prison, umayim serehu oid. What's he saying? If you don't be good, I'm going to tell the goyim on you, and what? They'll put me in prison? Rabbi Akiva was in prison right there. So that this whole story seems to be totally meaningless. It seems we don't understand it at all whatsoever. Rabbi Nezal says, "Ach da, you should know, ki gam al yedei mi she'oimer toiro barabim, v'shaimim talmidim she'enom hagurim," that also, besides what we said before, there's another case where a person who teaches Torah publicly and talmidim that are unworthy, talmidim that are not good talmidim, listen to his words of Torah, al yedei ze bo gamkein atziras geshamim. That also, chas v'shalom, causes Hashem to hold back the rain. That also causes a lack of rain in the world. Rabbi Nezal explains why. What's the connection between teaching Torah to somebody that you're not supposed to teach Torah to versus rain? Now the question is, where is there a concept of not being allowed to teach Torah to someone? The Gemara says that there's a pasuk in the Chumash where it says, "Laman tihye Torah Hashem beficha," that the Torah, the words of Hashem, should be in your mouth. And the Gemara learns out from this that there is an obligation that the Torah should be taught bekashrus. The Torah should be taught kosher, which means, for example, a mezuzah, a pair of tefillin, a sefer Torah, there is a halacha that these things have to be written on parchment. Parchment is something that's made from the skin of an animal, from the hide, the thick skin of an animal. The Gemara says that if a Jew writes a sefer Torah, or tefillin, or mezuzahs, on parchment that's made from the skin of a treif animal, that mezuzah is posel, that tefillin is posel. How do we know it? It's based on this pasuk, Laman tihye Torah Hashem beficha, that the Torah Hashem has to be on your lips. It means whatever the Torah is being written on must be something from an animal that could be allowed to go into your lips, something you're allowed to eat. The Gemara learns out from the same pasuk, from this same pasuk, Laman tihye Torah Hashem beficha, the Gemara learns out that there's a responsibility on a Rebbe to watch out, to study his Talmidim, and to be careful not to teach Torah to a Talmid she'enoi hogon. If there's a student who's coming to learn for the wrong reasons, he's coming to learn about Torah so that he can shoot holes in the Torah, so that he can show chas v'shalom how silly the Torah is, if he thinks, or something like that, a Rebbe has to be very, very careful when he's teaching Torah to watch his Talmidim, to get to know them real well, so that he knows who he's allowed to teach, who he's not allowed to teach, who he's allowed to teach everything to, and who he's only allowed to teach certain things to. He has to be careful. And the Gemara learns it out. The Gemara says it's a similar concept. This concept of writing a Sefer Torah on the skin of a kosher animal, when a Rebbe is teaching Torah, he's also writing a Sefer Torah on the heart of his Talmidim, in the minds of his Talmidim. He's inscribing the words of Torah. If the Talmud is a kosher Talmud, then the words of Torah are being written on a kosher skin. If the Talmud is a Talmud she'enoi hogun, if the Talmud is unworthy, then chas v'sholem, it's as if the Rebbe were writing a Sefer Torah on the skin of an animal that's not kosher. This is what the Gemara says. So now Rabbi Nizal says, you should know that when a Rebbe teaches Torah publicly, and he teaches chas v'sholem to students that aren't worthy, this is also something that holds up the rain. Just like we said before that when there's milchamos, there's war in the world, it holds up rain, so too a Rebbe teaching Talmidim Sheinam Hagunim also holds up rain. Why? Rabbi Nizal explains, Ka'idei Kovoid HaTorah Bog Shamim, because we know that when the Torah is given the proper respect, when the Torah is treated properly, this is what brings the bracha of rain. Bebechinas, as the pasuk says, Ukevoid Hashem Nire Be'onon, that the honor of Hashem was seen in the cloud. This refers to Hashem appearing to the Jews in the desert in a cloud. But note, Ukevoid Hashem Nire Be'onon. The Kovoid of Hashem was visible in the clouds. Meaning, Rabbi Nizal says, that when the Kovoid of Hashem is proper, when Kovoid HaTorah is being upheld properly, then the clouds are okay. Everything will be okay with the clouds. When the Kovod of Hashem is being disturbed, Chas V'Shalom, it's being disgraced, it'll show itself again in the clouds. The clouds serve as a screen for us to be able to see how the Kovod of Hashem, how the Kovod of Torah is being upheld. And we know that clouds are what bring rain. Clouds are what are responsible for rain. This is what the pasuk says, Kel hakovoid hirim Hashem almayim rabim. The honor of Hashem blasted forth. Hirim ram is like thunder. The honor of Hashem thundered forth, and Hashem appeared on plentiful water. Mayim rabim. Rabbi Nizal says, Hainu bechinas gishomim sheboim al yedei kovod Hashem. Bechinas kovod haTorah. This refers to the rain that comes when there is kovod Hashem, when Hashem is being respected properly, when the Torah is being respected properly, then there is rain. V'haloi mei Torah l'talmid she'enoi hogun, and a person who chas v'shalom teaches Torah to a student to whom which he's not allowed to teach Torah, just as, for example, the Gemara says there's an avera to teach a goy Torah. we're not allowed to reveal to the goyim the secrets of our Torah, the deep messages. If a person ever discusses Torah with a goy, it could only be on a surface level, very, very light. But the pnimius haTorah, the depth of Torah, a Jew is never permitted to share with the goyim. They are not considered worthy of it. So Rabbi Nezal says, the Gemara tells us in Chulin, V'haloimei Torah l'talmud she'enoi hogun, that a person who teaches Torah to a student who is unworthy, Omrazal, the Gemara says, Shehu kizoyrek even lemarkulis, it's as if he's throwing a stone to the idol Markulis. It's as if he's worshipping idols. That's how bad a crime this is considered. The Gemara says, it's as if the person were throwing a stone to this idol Markulis. Upirush Razal, and Tosfos tells us in Sanhedrin, what is Markulis? Why was this idol given the name Markulis? Shemarkulis pirushoi markilus. That the word Markulis is actually a contraction of two words. Kilus, lekales, means to praise. We say in Yishtabach, li'ale ulekales, al kol divrei shiros v'sishpochis. Kilus means praise. Mar means the opposite. This idol was the opposite of praise. He was unworthy of praise. Rabbi Nezal says, Hainu chiluf hakovoid. This means the opposite of praise is the opposite of kovoid. Kovoid means respect, praise, those are all the same thing. Nimtza, what do we see from this? That kishaloime Torah letalmid she'enoi hogun, that when a person teaches Torah to a student that's not worthy of being taught words of Torah, hu hepech hakovoid, it's the opposite of kovoid. It's as if you're worshipping this idol that's the opposite of kovoid, that's unworthy of respect. V'alkein bo al yedei zeh atzirus gishomim hepech hakovoid. Therefore, what happens is, the rain is held back, which is also the opposite of kavod. We said before, ukevod Hashem nireh be'onon, that the kavod of Hashem is shown in the cloud. We said, keil hakavod hirim Hashem amayim rabim, the kavod of Hashem is manifested by a lot of water, gushing rain. When there's a pigam in the kavod of Hashem, when a person is teaching Torah to a student who he shouldn't be teaching to, so that the kavod of Torah is being disgraced by being put into the hands of this person who could destroy it, who could disgrace it, who could harm it, then it's the opposite of kavod, so the rain is held back. Rain is also says, zag, sir, atziris, kshamim, hepecha kavod, shal yodai boing shamim. The opposite of kavod, through which rain comes. Rain comes through kavod. Says, this is what's meant by the pasuk in Mishlei Perek Chavov, where the pasuk says, "Kamotor bekotzir," like rain during a harvest time, or "Ukisheleg bakayitz." That's not written here. That's a part of this pasuk. "Ukisheleg bakayitz," and like snow in middle of the summer, "Kain loinoavo liksil kovoid." That's how ridiculous it is to give a fool kavod. As silly as it would be for it to be snowing in the summer, or for it to be raining when they're going to cut the tefuah, which means, again, in middle of the summer, when you want to cut the tefuah, when you need it to be dry, that's when you want the rains to stop. The rain season is in the winter, when the crops get filled and saturated with rain and they grow and everything. Then in the summer, you want it to be nice and sunny outside so that you can go harvest all the crops. The pasuk says, as rain in the kotzir and as snow in the summer, Kain loinoavok slaksil kovoid. So too, it's wrong, it's improper for a ksil, a fool, to be given kavod. Rabbi Nezal explains, Hainu, kishaloimei Torah letalmid she'enoi hogun, when a person is teaching, transmitting Torah to a student who isn't worthy, sheze bechinas noisein laksil kavod, that's this concept of giving a fool kavod, because the Torah is kavod. What greater prestige is there than the Torah itself? What greater chunk of respect, hunk of respect and glory and honor is there than the Torah itself? It's one big package of kavod. Shenoisin kovar Torah leksil, this person who goes ahead and gives the kovar of Torah to a fool, dahainu talmid sheinoi hogun, meaning a student who's unworthy, who's classified, he's called this term fool, vayideze mekalkel hakshamim, that causes a spoilage to the rain. What do we mean by a spoilage to the rain? Vezehu kemotor bakotzer. This is what it means, that it'll rain when you don't need rain. It'll rain when you're harvesting your foods. Hainu kilkul hakshamim. This means a messing up of the rain. Sheyardin shaloi ba'inoson. Whereby the rain falls when it's not supposed to fall, when it's not at its right time, it's in the wrong season. Ki b'shas hakotzer azai adaraba mazik hamotor. Because when you're going out to harvest the crops, at that time rain can harm it. It makes it much more difficult to cut and to do everything that you have to do for the harvesting. So Rabbein Azal says, Kein loinoavo leksil kovoid. So too, it is improper, it's wrong, to pass on to this ksil, this fool, kovoid. Kaideze bi'atzmai hu kilkul hakshamim. Because of this in itself, this act of giving kovoid to a ksil, of teaching Torah to a student who's unworthy, this will result in a holding up from the rain, meaning that when the rain is needed, you won't get it, you'll get it when it's not needed, which means a kilkul of kshamim. So we've shown so far in this Torah that there are two things that could chas v'shalom cause an atzira sakshamim. One is milchamais in the world, conflict, battle. The second one is a person teaching Torah to a talmid she'enoi hogon. This is also something that holds up the rain. It's oitzer dikshamim.
I just ask on the concept of a talmid she'enoi hogon. Isn't it the Rebbe's job to make him hogon? In other words, I give stories in Mara Benazal, people came.
The answer is yes and no. One of the most important missions of a Rebbe, of a Tzaddik, is to take people that aren't good and to make them good. The answer to that is, the question is, so then what are we talking about? The answer is, we can understand this based on a stira in the Gemara. There are two statements in the Gemara that seem to be in perfect conflict. The Gemara says in one place that if a person is studying Torah shelo lishma, if a person is studying Torah for the wrong reasons, the Gemara says, fine, let him study Torah even if it's for the wrong reason. Why? Because he'll come for the wrong reason. He'll come because you'll promise him $1 million. The Zohar HaKadosh says, Rav, Rabbi Abba once went out in the middle of the street and he made an announcement. He said, anybody that wants to get very rich, come into the Beis Medrash, come learn Torah, you're going to get tremendous wealth. The Zohar HaKadosh says, one clown decided to take him up on the offer. He came into the Beis Medrash and said, fine, Torah, I'm not interested. Money, yes, I'll learn. He came, he sat 2-3 days, and he learned, and he said, and then Rabbi Abba was coming around talking to the students. Rabbi Abba saw he looked troubled, so Rabbi Abba said, what's your problem? So he said, my problem is money. Where's the money? Where's the bucks? You told me if I come here to learn, I'm going to get money. Rabbi Abba said, wait. The Zohar HaKadosh says, he waited, and obviously it took like 4, 5, 6 days for this person to start enjoying what he was doing, to start enjoying the learning, and to start getting an appreciation for the value of Torah. And suddenly he came to a realization that money was a joke compared to what he was getting here. The Torah is called Hanechmodim Mizohav Umipozrov. It's more precious than the choices of gold. So the Zohar HaKadosh says that Rabbi Abba came over to him a little while later, and he said to him, you're about to get your money. So the Zohar HaKadosh said, this student started crying. He felt so embarrassed that he did such a silly thing, that he dared to use the word money and Torah in the same breath like. And the Zohar HaKadosh shows that a man showed up in the yeshiva with a becher of puz, made of puz, a kois, made out of the choicest gold in the world. The Gemara says there's like 2 ounces of this stuff in the world at a time. So if, let's say, gold regularly is $400 an ounce or something like that, this kind of gold was like $4 million an ounce. This guy came with a becher, and he said he's looking for a son-in-law for his daughter. And he wanted Rabbi Abba to give him a son-in-law, and whoever the student is that he gives, he'll give him this Becher as Natan, to supply him that if he sells this Becher, he'll have enough money to study Torah for the rest of his life and support his family without any problem. So the Zohar Kodesh shows how he got the Ashiris also. So here's a case of a person coming to learn Torah for the wrong reasons, and we say it's great, no problem. The Gemara says in another place, the same Gemara says in another place, that if a person studies Torah for the wrong reasons, better that he wasn't created. Chas v'shalom. The Gemara rips it to shreds, smithereens. So Tosfos, these two statements in the Gemara appear a few times in Shas. And wherever it appears, Tosfos comments that, by the way, we know that there's this other conflicting statement. The answer is that there are two types of shaloi l'shma. There's one type of Leila Shema where a person, because he doesn't know about religion, or because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't know enough, therefore he doesn't know that this is good. He has no idea that this is good. So therefore, if you come to him and offer him Torah, he's not interested. It's nothing to him. Therefore, you have to lie to him, possibly, or seemingly lie, or you have to dress up the Torah to him. You have to call it culture, or you have to call it mental exercise. You have to call it something else. You have to draw him in by painting the Torah into something that he's looking for, like making it advertising, marketing, presented in a way that it is something that he thinks he's looking for. Then he grabs it and he finds out that who knows what. The Tosfos explains this is the case of a person who's looking for kavod, or a person that type of thing. It's a loy lishma, but it's a kosher loy lishma. Tosfos says, but there is a loy lishma. There's a person who wants to learn, and his whole purpose of wanting to learn is to make fun. He wants to learn, he wants to find out what's religion about, so that he can spit on it. So he'll be able to make fun of all the religious people. Or he'll be able to make, he wants to learn about chassidus, so he'll be able to make fun of the chassidim. He'll be able to show how they're all full of hot air, that kind of thing. That's the loy lishma. Where Tosfos says about him, the Gemara says better he wasn't created. And that's the one that the Rebbe has to be able to weed out. Where there is this concept of one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch, Chas v'shalom. There is a concept of a person who's bad, where he's coming in with a negative kavana, where the halach is that the Rebbe has to push him out. He has to chase him away, that kind of thing. And it's only if he forces the issue and begs his way back, then the Rebbe takes him in, and he can even fix such a character. But the initial rule is that there are these two types of loy lishma. There are two types of einoy hogun. One, it's a mitzvah. One, the Gemara says, a Rebbe is not considered a Rebbe unless he has Rishon at his table. Unless he has people who are far from Kiddushin, he's being makar of them. But on the other hand, there are certain ones, like, who was the example in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hashem said, don't bring them in because the Erev Rav, where Hashem warned Moshe Rabbeinu, you want to be Makarav, it's a great idea. Not them, because they're going to be a source of suffering. They are this Bechina of Talmud She'eino Yehogun, in a sense, where you're going to see that they're going to make so much trouble for Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was such an incredible Rachmon, and he had such faith in the goodness of Hashem and in the power of Torah, that he felt that no way, there's no way they can be bad enough that I'm not going to be able to be misakin them. And we see yet that a lot of kilkulim came out of the Erev Rav, Rachmon Otzlan. So we see that there definitely are two types of Talmud Sheinoi Hogum. There's one that, of course, there's a mitzvah to be Mekarev, and you do everything because he's not bad, he's not rotten, he doesn't know, or he has problems. He has a taiva for kovoid, or money, or other things, and he doesn't know that this is much better than that. But there's another one who's a Talmud Sheinoi Hogun, where he's a Bechina of a Chaya Tameya, Rachmon Otzlan. He's an unkosher animal, where you're not allowed to write. If you write words of Torah on that skin, it's an Avera, Chas v'shalom. There you have to be careful. There, sometimes there's a purification that has to take place before you can teach. Just like, I'll give you an example. If you look at the beginning of the Shvuchei HaRab Chaim Vitalzal, it brings the story that when the Arizal wanted to send a message to this Reb Chaim Vitalzal, that It's time that the whole mission that the Arizal came to the world for was to teach this student. Reb Chaim Vital Zal lived in Damascus at the time. The Arizal lived in Tzfas. And the Arizal sent out signals, ruchnius signals, that each and every single day this Reb Chaim Vital Zal got a message, beruchnius, either in a dream or some kind of vision, that some rabbi in Tzfas is summoning him to come to him. And Reb Chaim Vital Zal mentioned this to his students, like some clown is making some waves in the air, you know, that I'm being summoned to go, but meaningless, because Reb Chaim Vital Zal at the time was one of the greatest tzaddikim in the world. He was a super Talmud Chacham on his own. He wrote a Pirush on his Zohar Kodesh and everything, so he was ignoring it. Until finally an incident happened where he was learning an item in his Zohar Kodesh and he didn't understand it. He couldn't follow it. He couldn't understand the meaning. And he said, time to stop. I'm going to go check that thing out. So he came to the Arizal, and the Arizal at first welcomed him in, and they began to talk Torah, and they started shooting questions back and forth. Each time he asked the question, the Arizal answered him. Then Reb Chaim Vital Zal asked him a question, and the Arizal said, no answer. He said, come on, give me the answer. No, you're not worthy. And this Reb Chaim Vital Zal, it's written, he went back to his inn, and he put on a sackcloth, a sock, and he started fasting and crying to Hashem, begging Hashem that he should be considered worthy of being accepted completely as a student by this Arizal. And then afterwards, after a day or several days of fasting and sack and everything, he came to the Arizal, and the Arizal said, now I can teach you. Meaning that because this was considered a pigam, in a sense, on the part of Reb Chaim Vital Zal, that he showed a reluctance. He wasn't fast enough to jump to become a student of the Arizal and to accept this, as because of that he had to be punished, in a sense, and go through this suffering of being pushed away until he showed himself worthy, meaning until he built up enough of a thirst and a yearning to break the walls down. And this is exactly the story that's brought, you know, clearly. Go ahead.
You know, he said sometimes a Rebbe could put Kedusha into a sefer, that even though, let's say, after he passed away, he could pass on the power through his sperm, etc. You know, could this power also, that the wrong people won't get to it, does that also, is that shmir?
A billion zillion percent. In other words, there's no question at all that a tzaddik who writes a sefer, such as all the rabbis of the Gemara who wrote the Torah Shebal Peh, or such as the Baal Shem Tov who wrote his form, or Rabbeinu Zal who wrote the Likutei Moran, they definitely, their words are part of their nefesh, nafshi yotza bedabroi, ano nafshi ksovis yehovis. They're a psukim to show that a sefer is actually the soul of the person who writes it. And therefore, there's no question at all that there is a built-in protection that tzaddikim yelchubam upoishim yikoshlubam, that only the right person is going to get this into his hands. Another person is going to try from today to tomorrow to get hold of it, and he won't be able to get hold of it. And it's only the right ones whom he can be somewhere in Alaska, and it'll get to him. Somehow, some way, it'll get to him. 100%.
Like the map, like the Brachon Islam, when somebody misses on someone, is that considered like it's part of the three things where you, like, so you can't kill someone, you have to give up your own life?
Rather than to masser somebody else? I don't know. In other words, is that considered one of the three items which you have to die before you go ahead and do it? Possibly, because again, the type of musr that the Gemara is talking about is where you turn them over to the hands of the goyim, where it could, chas v'shalom, result in death. So it seems it's a similar concept to that. But I remember this from my JDL days. I remember being in TA at the time, and at that time, Rahman al-Islam, that was when the incidents were first taking place, where there were so-called Jewish organizations, Jewish establishment organizations, which when confronted with the hoodlums of the JDL, they went ahead and called in Goyish police, or they had these hoodlums, Rahman al-Islam, arrested by the Goyim and brought to trial in Goyish courts. At that time, I remember Rabbi Meir Kahani came forth blasting with the words of the Rambam, the words of the Shulchan Aruch. And I forget the exact wording, but it's as dramatic as you could possibly imagine, the type of wording that's used in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch about a person who turns a Jew over to the Goyim. Like, he tells on a Jew to get a Jew arrested by the goyim, chas v'shalom, that kind of thing. Person is not permitted to do that at all whatsoever unless he has exercised every means possible at his disposal to try to go via the Jewish legal system. And he's gone to Bezdin and everything, and Bezdin issued a psak that this person should not be doing what they're doing. And then the guy goes ahead and does it. In other words, the person is not willing to submit at all whatsoever to a Jewish court of law, that kind of thing. That's the only case where there's a possibility of taking it up in Goyish court, and then you better be a very, very learned rabbi to know exactly what and how to do it, so that a person should chas v'shalom, not go near that ugly word called moser chas v'shalom.
Rabbi Zim was talking about, it's like somebody asked him about turning over a murderer, a Jew that Rechon Aslan becomes a murderer. He said it was a shayla, he didn't want to say I might usher or mutter.
It's a delicate point. We'll hold it over here for now, to be continued.